Blog Talk Radio.
Tempest got along well, managed not only her naturally pronounced bosom, but on her genuine personality, intelligence, and sharp sense of humor. Most noted for her flaming red hair and figure, this Georgia peach became one of the most noted strippers in the world. Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin said she had the, quote, best two props in show business, unquote, and they said that in 1951.
Still does.
In the late 1950s, her breasts, or her money makers, as she called them, were insured by Lloyd's of London for $1 million. When asked if she was ever embarrassed about her ample endowment, she answered, They don't make them too big for this business. And Tempest performed for years on stage and appeared in some burlesque films in the 50s, as well as some wonderfully made C-grade productions around the same time. And her autobiography, The Lady is a Band, published in October of 1987. So am I right on track so far?
You're correct.
Okay. Correct. What I'd like to do...
But I worked the Dunes here. I headlined the Minsky Review,
mm-hmm.
and then he moved over to the Aladdin. I headlined that review. And then I came back to the Aladdin, headlined that Pat Marina's Models, and I also worked the Hacienda.
Now, when did you first come to Vegas? You remember what year you made your first appearance?
I think it was 1951 in a very small nightclub in North Las Vegas called the Embassy.
Okay. And when were you in your first bigger casino?
1957 at the Dunes.
At the Dunes.
First one.
Now, since this is a mob-themed show, I need to ask you. In the 50s, the Dunes was reportedly one of the mob-controlled casinos.
Correct.
Did you know that when you performed there? I mean, had you heard rumors?
You know, about Las Vegas.
And did you have any problems or anything regarding the mob? You didn't have any difficulties?
No, because Las Vegas, when the mob ran it, we had no crime here. Everybody dressed when they went out, and it was a whole entirely a different environment.
I've heard from several people, and you're unanimous, that when the mob controlled the so-called mob days, that Vegas, well, of course, it was smaller, but that customer service was a buzzword, and that, you know, before the corporations and the casino owners or hidden owners, the mob, they were interested in taking good care of the clients, the customers, the gamblers, and and they would do the comps, and they didn't care if they made profits from every division. They wanted their money from the gambling, from the casino, and food and beverage or entertainment. If they didn't turn a big profit, nobody cared. But when they went corporate now, they want
everybody. Yeah, it's different now.
You can't even get a cup of coffee comped, you know, or meal, anything.
Yeah, whole different ballgame today.
Yeah, exactly.
But it was. Did you enjoy it when you were first here? I mean, did you
like
Vegas?
I loved it. Yeah. It was absolutely fantastic.
How about now? I mean, not as a performer, but just to be here. Would you prefer old Vegas?
I would prefer old Las Vegas the way it was before, because people were more friendly. People dressed when they went out. I mean, these people, you go into a casino to see a show, and they look like they, you know, just came out of, I don't know what.
Yeah, from the pool, they have their shorts on and tee-tops.
Now, back in the so-called mob days, people wouldn't have been in one of these showrooms with shorts on, right? Shorts and tank tops and stuff. They'd have been.
No, they had evening gowns on.
And
their little furs on, too, right? Yeah.
I went out between shows to see a show in the lounge, I had an evening gown on, my long white mink coat on. And as a matter of fact, I had one for 7 days a week. As a matter of fact, the maitre d' asked me one night, he said, "Do you have a mink farm out there?" I said, "Yes."
Let me, I got so engrossed here with talking to Nikki and Tempest, I forgot to mention that if anybody has a question or comment for me, the show, or either guest, you can reach us by phone at 646-478-0982. 646-478-0982. And for anybody watching on liveatthestudio.tv, if you're in the chat room and have a question, you can send your message, and we'll answer the question for you based on your text. Okay, what I was thought I'd do, I got a whole list of questions here I'd like to cover, and time goes by so quick, I don't want to wait too long to get started.
Well, Tempest said you could ask her anything. I know you had a list of questions.
Yes.
And when I presented them to Eric Holt, I said, "Here's what, you know, he wants to know." She says, "He could ask me anything, so anything goes. Whatever you want, you'll answer, right?"
Yeah, I decided to leave.
Okay.
But speaking of the mob, I met Bugsy Siegel when I was 19, before I went into show business in Los Angeles. I was working as a car hop at Simon's Drive-In. And at that time, a lot of the show people used to come in, you know, after they finished their show to get a bite to eat. And I waited in the car house. We had these cute outfits on. Mm-hmm. And I waited on him. I thought that he drove up in this big car, white car, in this great white suit with a black shirt. And, oh, he was gorgeous. So he asked me out for a date, and I went on a date with him a couple of times. I think his mistress, Virginia Hill, was in Europe or someplace.
Mm-hmm.
And about the third night, he asked me out, and I happened to be off. And all of a sudden, about 6 o'clock, the boss called me, and he said, one of the girls became ill, and I need you tonight. And I said, this is a very important night for me. I said, because my date, we're going to go up to Vegas. And he says, well, it's either you come in or you're fired. So I couldn't afford to lose my job. So that was the night that he was assassinated.
The same night
that I was supposed to be with him.
June 20th of 47.
Did you know it was him? Did you never know. Knew it was supposed to be.
Until I read the
papers. Isn't that something?
Holy mackerel, yeah.
Wow.
I would have been him. I would have been with him.
Oh, my God.
So thank you again.
See how fate is? Yeah.
Yeah.
See?
Oh, my God.
So you had to be shocked and surprised when you read the papers and you saw that was him.
That was unbelievable. It was
she would have been just as well sitting on that couch.
Exactly.
That's right. Yeah, she would have been with
them. I was there night before.
Well, let's be thankful that you weren't, right?
I know.
God was looking over me.
Somebody's watching you. I'm not going to go too much into your childhood, so I don't want to miss your adult stuff, so we might go back to that if we're running ahead.
Oh, Charles, that stuff is over.
Okay.
Yeah.
I grew up.
Now, you had your stepfather in Eastman, Georgia. He was a sharecropper.
Correct.
And he was a little abusive and had an alcohol problem.
Yes.
So he wasn't your favorite person?
No, not at all.
Overall. And you were raped when you were about 13 years old.
Yeah.
By a local kid or local gang.
Yeah. About five guys grabbed me in the car and pulled me up, took me up in the hills and raped me one by one.
So all five of them.
Yeah.
Wow, that'd be real traumatic for you.
Well, and my stepfather tried to rape me. I woke up one night and he was on top of me and I kicked him off
hurt?
Of me.
Okay. And you had a kind of, you were in a small house with several people, so some of you slept on the floor sometimes, and he ended up on them with you.
Exactly.
Did he bother you again after that?
No.
Did your mother know what was happening?
No, she didn't. I never told her.
Oh.
And I never told her about the five boys because the one guy, he was a sheriff's son. He said, if you tell anybody, we'll kill you.
And back in those days, you know, I'm just thinking of the stereotype of a southern sheriff type thing. You mentioned
yes.
Was that like the good old boy thing, too, where they would have covered probably?
Yes, exactly.
So you might have had trouble getting any place if you had complained, huh? So you left home at a young, how old were you? You were a teenager.
14.
14.
Yeah. I was married at 14.
You were married at 14?
Yeah. Who did you marry at 14?
A serviceman.
Really?
I think it was in the Marines.
Uh-huh.
I was working as a waitress in this little cafe, and this lady lived upstairs, had an apartment upstairs, and she said, well, my son's coming home on furlough. I'd like for you to meet him. So I met him. He was 30 years old, and I was 14.
Oh.
And we got married. It lasted overnight.
Overnight?
It's enough.
So it was a quick marriage.
Yeah, and my second one, I married a paratrooper. That lasted 2 weeks. And then I married a singer, a comedian. It lasted 2.5 years. Then my last husband was a performer. He was a singer, Herb Jeffries. And that lasted 10 years.
And you had a daughter with him, right?
I had a daughter with him.
That your only child?
Yes.
One daughter. So you ended up in Los Angeles.
Yes, correct.
After you left home, you made a couple of stops. Right. You ended up in Los Angeles.
Well, I went to Macon, Georgia, which is a little bigger city.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to Columbus, Georgia. And that's where I worked in a hosiery mill for a while and inspected nylon hose before they went out and we boxed them. And I quit, and I started working as a waitress. And I used to wait on this very good-looking gentleman, looked like Dennis O'Keefe. And I got acquainted with him, and one day he came in, he says, "I'm going to California next week. Would you like to go?" I said, "When do we leave?"
Yeah.
He brought me to California. Oh. Turned out to be a disaster.
It did.
He took me out there and left me with his parents and went back to Georgia on business, and I got a job. That's when I got the job as
a car hop.
And I used to chit-chat with the manager and one of the girls after we got off and went and had a cup of coffee, and sometimes so sit there at 4 o'clock in the morning. And this particular night I got home, he had come in unexpected, and he accused me of being out with a guy. So he took me and he shoved me clear across the room onto the bed, jumped on top of me, and had both hands around my throat. He says, "I'm going to kill you."
Oh.
So you'd be surprised how strong you can get when somebody says they're going to kill you. So I kicked him off me, and his mother and father were screaming, "She hasn't done anything wrong, you know, don't bother." So anyway, I knew he had a gun. And as I jumped up and put my jacket on, out the door, I heard something go click, and it was a gun. It misfired.
Oh, my goodness.
And I jumped over a fence to get into the neighbor's house and called police, and the police sat there while I got out, and that was the end of that one.
So that was Kiwi's history.
Yeah.
You haven't had too much good luck with men.
No.
Yeah, you've had some problems.
Wow.
I have to get that.
They get killed.
Now, so you're after you left this fella, before you had a chance to do any serious damage to you, you ended up working as in a tavern, am I correct?
Yes.
As a waitress, right? And you met somebody that ended up, you weren't exactly jumping for joy when this proposition first came up.
No.
But a fellow you knew, and he apparently had some mob connections, or may have been a mobster, he suggested that with your personality and physical attributes that perhaps you should get into show business.
Yeah, and I said, right. "Oh, I've heard that before."
Yeah.
Right.
So you weren't jumping through hoops to see this lady. But he eventually convinced you to go... see a lady at the Follies Theater in Los Angeles.
Right, correct.
And a lady named Lillian Hunt.
Correct.
And when you went to talk to her, actually, you missed your first appointment with her.
Right.
And this guy wasn't too happy that you didn't show up.
No, right.
So you promised you would go the second time.
Yes.
And you talked to Lillian, and from reading the book, I was kind of chuckling that, you know, she was quite brusque telling you.
Yeah, because she was that naive. She didn't know what stripping was.
First, I said, "Well, doing what?" He said, "Dancing." I said, "No," he said, "striptease."
Stripteasing. She said, What's that?
What's that?
Yeah, she didn't even know what that was.
I'm from a little town in Georgia. There were, my right foot from my left.
So,
but I had a lot of guts to get out of that environment.
Yeah, you were actually dating the owner of the bar, right? Or the some relationship with him.
Yes, right.
So when you talked to Lillian, when you went on your second appointment and talked to her, she actually said she could start you in the chorus line.
Right.
Instead of stripping, but you'd be in the chorus. But then she asked you to disrobe, didn't she, to strip down, and you were a little uncomfortable with
that. She wanted to see if I had any scars.
Okay.
I said, "Trust me, I don't have any scars." Well, I have to see. But anyway, eventually I took my top. And I said, "Do you think my boobs are too big?" That was what I said.
Yeah, right? And that's what they would love.
Yeah. She said, "Boobs can't be too big for my business." I was so naive.
I know.
So anyway, she hired you.
Yes.
And you were only, the chorus line... In fact, I guess it wasn't too long. She mentioned that maybe you'd like to do something else, but you were satisfied to begin with.
Yeah. I thought I was going to get to Vegas to be a showgirl. That was my intentions.
Okay. Dancer?
Yes.
But it wasn't too long. There were some circumstances that you ended up moving up fairly quickly.
Right.
Yeah.
And, I got the Mickey Award with Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis at that.
Yes, right. Yeah, you certainly are.
In fact, she has a show coming up May. Tell us about that.
June 5th, 6th, and 7th, it's Exotic World Review at the Palms.
Uh-huh.
And this started in Hellendale. Dixie Evans owned this museum. And once a year, they would have all the, you know, people come from all over, and they do this show once a year out by the pool. So now 3 years ago, they moved it up here. The first year, we were at the Celebrity Theater, and last year, we were at the Plaza.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the Friday night, it's the Legends that are in the business. And then Saturday and Sunday, the newer girls that are in the business.
That's June 5th, 6th, and 7th.
Right.
At the Palms.
Yeah,
in
this exotic world.
And she'll be dancing. She'll be featured there.
You're
headlining, right?
I'm headlining.
Beautiful.
Yeah. You're going to come and see her?
I'm going to be back in New York.
Oh, I'll be there with her. I'll be backstage with her. Well, I'm going to be backstage with her, you know, making sure everything's okay.
Good.
Right?
Yeah.
Good. Well, good luck on that.
Yeah.
Very good. I'm glad you told me. I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah.
Something I had forgotten to write down, but as you progressed in your career, did you have any more dealings with your parents, your mother and stepfather? Did you have much contact with them?
I didn't see my family for 10 years, I guess, after I went into the biz. Well, my mother came to Atlanta, Georgia. I worked a nightclub. There she came to see me. And then she came to Orlando in the 70s. And my stepfather came with her and saw the show. And he said, she'll never get to heaven doing that kind of work. I said, I know somebody that won't be there.
Yeah.
Yet after the show, he was sitting out there watching the porno movies. I think that's what killed burlesque. Well, when they started bringing all the porno and taking off everything. Because burlesque was entertaining. We had the comedians. And we did it with class.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Yeah.
And only that, but like you had said, it was you left a lot to the imagination. That was
the tease.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The draw there.
Now
they just take everything
left
off.
To the imagination today.
No. Take it off and you're nude. But with you, it's different.
Yeah, I worked Carnegie Hall with the James Gang, a rock group. We toured for about 6 weeks, 6 weeks of one-nighters. And that was great. That was terrific. They thought I was a singer until I walked out on stage.
Really?
Well, I was in Kentucky and I was closing my engagement there. And a reporter called... the reporter there was doing an interview on me. He said, where do you go from here? So I said, Carnegie Hall. He said, yeah, right. I said, that's my next engagement.
Yeah.
So he calls Carnegie Hall.
And
the girl says, we don't have no stripper here. We got the James Gang coming in.
They didn't know you were going to be in the show?
No.
Surprise.
The Big Shots forbidded any publicity out on me. They said I could work it as long as no publicity got out. I mean, and then they were there for opening night, and they, oh my God, she's classy.
Oh,
absolutely
yeah.
Beautiful. They sent back for 8x10 photos. I said, never. They will not get a photo.
Your costumes were just beautiful. Did you have everyone handmade for you?
Yeah, a guy in New Jersey used to make my costumes.
Beautiful.
Which, they've all, I was known for my wardrobe.
Did you save those? Have you still got them? Or some
of them were stolen, and some of them I got rid of.
Yeah. Wow.
Which I'm sorry that I did.
I was going to say, you play a collection.
And now when I went back to my husband, Herb Jeffries, and we never remarried, and when I walked out on him, I left everything, and he wouldn't let me have my costumes and the rest of my clothes.
So there's some stuff he might have, huh?
Maybe you put on eBay and sold it.
His ex-wives are wearing it.
Oh, yeah.
Wives. He's had five wives and five
Is he married now? Well, he's 98. Does he have a wife?
Yeah, she's 55.
Wow.
Holy mackerel.
He must be pretty good to get a 55-year-old. You want to comment on that?
I taught him well.
Good for you. You probably taught a lot of the men.
Yeah. I taught Elvis Presley everything.
Yes, that's our next stop here. I'm going to take him in order. In your biography, and the lady is a vamp, you list several men that you had affairs with, celebrity types.
Some were forbidden, but I crossed a line.
You did.
I was a Britney Spears and Lindsay Lohan without the substance, without the booze and the drugs.
Good for you.
I got high off of life.
I've listed five of them here. I'd like to take them one at a time and have you tell us a little bit about each one. First of all, we already talked about Mickey. I got five more. How about, did you know Sammy Davis Jr.?
Very well. Very well.
Okay. Can you tell us a little bit about how you met him and your...
You know, the first time I saw Sammy Davis Jr. when I came to California, he was working with the Will Mastin Trio in a small nightclub. That's how far back I go with him.
Oh, yeah. That's when he first began.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it graduated into friendship, and then...
A little more?
a little more. And when he worked... The first time he worked... I had a house up above him. I was up on the... About one street up, I could look down and see his house. He bought the old Judy Garland house. And he used to give parties there. And I used to attend quite a few of them. And when he, first time he played, I was living in Vegas, and first time he played Carnegie Hall, he called me, he said, I'm playing Carnegie Hall for the first time, and I want all the people that I love there. So he sent for me, put me up in the Waldorf Astoria, and had a wonderful time.
How long did your relationship with him last?
Until he died.
Right until he died, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
I was in the show in Tahoe.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I was in the show in Tahoe, and he was in Harris. And this is the last time I saw him. He was very thin.
Now, what year did he die? I'm trying to place that. I don't remember.
I forget now.
It's been a while.
Yeah, I don't remember. It's been a while.
But you liked
but
him.
We remain friends.
And he was a nice guy. Did you ever get to meet some of the other Rat Packers? You obviously knew Dean Martin and Lewis, but
I hung around with that Rat Pack.
Oh, you did?
Because Marilyn Monroe and I were very good friends.
Marilyn Monroe, mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah. We used to live next door to each other.
Okay. I got to ask you. I hadn't intended to, but you just mentioned Marilyn Monroe. I've seen some documentaries on, I forget what channel, but what's the cable channels, where supposedly if you're a conspiracy theorist, they make a case that she was actually hit by the mob, a forced overdose. Do you believe any of that? Do you think that Marilyn was a threat?
Well, I don't know. When you start to think of it, she was involved with Bobby Kennedy and the president. It was very confusing.
Yeah.
But the lapse of time that was before they called someone after she died,
mm-hmm.
and I think her psychiatrist was the first one that got there, and also the whoever handled the death, it just didn't seem right.
And I'll tell you, this documentary, they make a pretty strong case. You know, they raise a lot of questions that make you wonder. The timing, certain people were in town at that time that they say could have done it. And
she had some problems. Of course, her mother was in an insane asylum. And this last guy that she married, that Arthur Miller, I think he was so smart, it made her feel stupid. She was far from stupid. She was a very bright girl.
So she wasn't a dumb blonde.
A great actress and a great comedian.
Yeah. Great actress.
So she was talented.
Talented.
In addition to looks.
But they put her, you know, as a dumb blonde. She was far from done. The movie that she made with Jane Russell was a fabulous movie.
And you and her were pretty good friends.
Yeah, we were good friends,
I'd like to move on now, Fallon. I remember this fellow from some movies, and he used to star, my recollection is he used to star as Wyatt Earp on a TV series. Hugh O'Brien.
Hugh O'Brien.
Yes. I think I had it. He was, I think, Wyatt Earp, and he always carried the butt line special.
Yeah,
he used to club,
exactly.
club the drunks over the head with
it.
And you knew him?
Yes.
How did you happen to meet him?
I was appearing at the show in San Francisco, and he was in town. And every day I was staying in the Fairmont, and he was staying there. So I ran into him. So he kept calling me, kept sending me flowers. Trying to get me to go out. So we finally went out. And the last time he called me, I was in Chicago. He had invited me over to Hugh Hefner's mansion in Chicago. Of course, I was married at that time. And I said, I don't think my husband will let me go. So now they were doing a thing on Elvis Presley 3 years ago and had to go to L.A. to do it. So he said, I just filmed Hugh Hefner, and I'm going back. And Hugh Hefner found out that we were filming you. He said, give her my phone number. So anyway, I autographed some pictures for him, and that was it. So now I go into, I had a doctor's appointment in Beverly Hills. And I walk in, and somebody says, Hugh Hefner's in there. So, I mean, not Hugh Hefner, Hugh O'Brien. And I said, what room is he in? So the doctor had gone out, so I walk in there, and I stand right in front of him, and I said, Hugh? And he looks at me. I'm looking right in his face, you know. And I said, Tempest Storm. He says, oh, my God. Oh, my God. He said, oh, my God. He grabs me and hugs me. He said, let's go to lunch. After this, I said, Hugh, I'm sorry, but I have two other doctor's appointments that I can't get out of. So anyway, we kept in touch, and they had invited me to a Christmas party, and I lived out at that damn ranch, and I had no way to get in there. And this Virginia, she said, I got a helicopter.
Uh-huh.
I said, are you paying for it?
Really? They picked her up with a helicopter?
Yeah, no. So anyway, I didn't go. And he ended up marrying this girl last year.
He did, yeah.
And they sent me an invitation. And they've invited me to some things, you know.
Before, I want to mention something before I forget, because time's going so quick here. Next Monday night, the 28th, we're going to do a Las Vegas and a special Las Vegas and the Mob tour. Runs out of the Greek Isles at 7 p.m. And Tempest and Nikki are going to be going along.
We're going. We're going to be there.
My mob hat on.
Have your mob hat on. And, don't
yeah,
forget,
we're going to be
get
there.
Get some sunglasses and be all set. And we're going to have several special guests.
We
and,
are.
In fact,
did I plug who else is going to be there?
Go ahead.
Johnny Seaton is going to be there. He's the Elvis impersonator,
yeah.
And he starred in a lot of shows, MGM, The Hill, 10 years
concert.
Ago, and now he's
yeah.
coming back to town.
Yeah.
And he's looking for a showroom, and he's going to be performing again. So I'm going to bring Johnny. He's going to be there.
And tentatively, he's going to be a guest right here
yep.
on the 6th.
Yes.
We're going to finalize that.
Speaking of the show that I'm doing in June,
mm-hmm.
Luke Littell and Laura Herbert, they're producing this show. But Dixie Evans has started it at Exotic World.
Okay.
So they're producing it.
Have you worked with them before?
Yes.
Okay. Where do people just call the Palms for tickets? Is that?
Or go on the Internet, I assume.
Or on the Internet.
Yeah, probably
yeah,
the
probably.
Internet would be good.
Again, it's June 5th, 6th, and 7th. So if you're interested,
yeah.
it's...
Well, she's on it before. I'm the 5th, right?
I'm
you're on the 5th.
Just one night,
six,
isn't
it?
Or is it the 6th?
Friday night. Is that the 6th?
Don't know off. Anyway, it'll be the Friday.
Friday
but
it's night.
Only
one night. It's only one night.
That I'm doing the show.
Yeah.
But the show itself is 3 nights.
But I'll be around there to autograph my photos.
Oh, great.
Day.
Okay.
They have a place
okay.
for that.
Okay.
Good.
And mention that you heard Tempest on the show tonight, she'll sign a little bigger autograph for you. Right?
a little more risque.
Risque,
yeah.
Autograph.
Yes. And if anyone has the book like you do, they could bring it and she'll autograph that too.
Yeah, so if you're thinking about taking the mob tour anyway, the 28th would be a good night to go. There's going to be some special guests. We're going to have a real good, enjoyable time there.
And she's going to take pictures with everyone.
Yep.
So
bring your
cameras.
Get some pictures with Tempest and some of the other people.
But I'll be selling my 8x10s if they want to buy them.
Oh, okay.
She'll,
all right.
Autographed 8x10 for sale.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. But if they want to just take a picture standing with you, they can do that.
They can take the one with you, too.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
now,
speaking of President Kennedy,
yeah.
I did a story on us, JFK and Tempest Storm. Barefoot in the park. I'll bring you and show it to you.
Okay, great.
Right.
Great. I got three names left to go, and we got about 7 minutes.
Okay, that went by fast.
I'm telling you,
seven
I don't
minutes?
Know where time goes.
Wow.
I think Nat King Cole, he was a very special person. You really liked him, didn't you?
A very special person. I went up to my third husband. We were trying to get back together. He said, let's go up to Cal Neva. So Nat King Cole was on that show with Marty Allen and Mitch DeWood. And they took me backstage and introduced me to him. Well, needless to say, that was the end of my husband and I getting back together.
Really? Oh.
Yeah.
We didn't know that.
He was very important in my life.
Oh.
Yeah, and he was... I always loved his music and his voice.
Yeah,
beautiful.
He was a real classic guy, had a lot of
He seemed like a gentle guy, was
he? Yes, he was very gentle.
And could sing like hell.
Yes, had a great voice.
But,
you know, a girl from being from a small hick town in the South, I did things I could have been tarred and feathered.
Yeah,
I know. You had a great life, though, Tempest.
I didn't let anybody tell me what to do. I defied society.
Yeah.
I crossed the line.
Yeah,
so
we
what?
Could tell by
yeah.
your life.
I had fun. I have no regrets.
Let's go quickly to John Kennedy, John F. Kennedy.
Yes.
Now, you met him. He was a senator from Massachusetts at the time.
Right, correct.
And you meant you were doing what, Washington, D.C.?
I was doing a nightclub. It was a legit nightclub because they never had any exotics there, and they had a couple of singers following me in, and that's where I met him. And we started going out, and we had a few dates and dinner and all kinds of things.
In fact, you turned the first attempt he made to do something, you kind of shot him down that first time, and he came back,
right?
And what, he had one of his
entourage
approach you and say he'd really like you to have a drink with him or
yeah.
dinner with him or whatever?
That was it.
Was he charming?
Yeah.
Oh, God, he was charming.
Yeah.
No.
Oh.
Suave.
Very suave.
Yeah.
That smile.
Yeah.
That beautiful, beautiful smile.
And, you know, the next thing I know, the papers, it's all over. Newspapers.
Oh, somebody picked up on that? Yeah.
Oh, my God. Well, I was in Detroit, and they had this show, Dennis Holey. It was like a Johnny Carson show, except it was noon. And the interview was going great, and all of a sudden he said, I understand you slept with President Kennedy. I said, you
Senator.
You certainly got my attention. And I said, but at this time he'd become president.
Yeah.
So anyway, I said, ask me that question again. I'm stalling.
Yeah.
Because I had never said anything about it.
Oh.
I had never, I was not one to brag about my affairs. If they got a hold of it, fine,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, and I said, ask me that question again. So finally I said, the man is not here to defend himself.
Yeah.
And I said, all these girls are going out and said they slept with the president.
Yeah.
I am not that type of person. So he says, well, what did you talk about in the bedroom?
So I put my foot in it. I said, it certainly wasn't politics. So the press agent that took me down to do this show, he said, you're going to have the press all over your derriere. I said, are you kidding? All these women going mad and said they slept with him.
I know.
I said, it won't mean a thing. Well, they mobbed me.
They did.
The press, you know, and they called me up. And they wanted an interview on the phone. I said, you come down here like the rest of the reporters. Mm-hmm. And then he called me back, big newspaper there. They said, well, I said, we're only friends. Then he called me. He says, well, I understand you're writing a book, the president and I. I said, no, but you gave me a hell of a title for it.
Right.
But it was a fun thing.
Oh, God, I bet it was.
Then my boyfriend called me up. Uh-huh. Why did you let sleeping dogs lie? I was all over the television.
Oh.
I mean, this was years later.
Yeah.
For some reason.
They had a hot story, though, and they were going to keep it up.
You've had some life.
The last one on my list.
I'm not finished.
I know.
The last one on my list is Elvis.
Right.
The King.
The King.
The King.
Tell us about that one.
He was the king.
I was
headlining the show at the Dune, and they were he came in to see the show, and we were all backstage, and they were taking pictures of Elvis and chorus girls, and they kept taking pictures of he and I, you know. And I had this guy that had come in on his Learjet.
Blog Talk Radio.
And waiting for me in the lounge with a couple other people. So I said... is this going to take very long? And I'm standing there by the king.
Uh-huh.
You know, I want to get the hell out of there, you know.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So I thought, well, I'm as big as he is. I got a bigger name. Who the hell is he?
Yeah.
That was my attitude,
you
know. So I go out and sit down with my friends, and he came out, and he didn't see me. He went over to the chorus girls. And all of a sudden he saw me. I'll never forget. He came over, and he kneeled down. I had this fabulous gown on. And he was going with his fingers, you know, like twirling with my skirt.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked up at me with those gorgeous eyes, and he said, could I join you? And I said, I don't know, ask these gentlemen. They said, of course. Of course, the chorus girls hated me.
Yeah.
I wonder why.
So that's how we started going out together.
Yeah,
about a year. And he was terrific. And I ran into the Memphis Mafia autographing some pictures in Palm Springs 2 years ago. They have a celebration down there every year.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, Tempest, if you had stayed with him, he would still be alive.
Is that right?
I thought that was a very nice compliment.
Well, sure was. We're already after time here. This will be recorded, but we stopped live streaming on the Blog Talk channel. So let me close quickly. I'm going to put you on the spot.
Uh-oh.
Of these names we mentioned, if you had a rank and pick a number one.
I know who she's going to say.
Who would it be? Who is the number one celebrity lover?
Elvis is still the king.
Elvis is the king.
That's
all
what
right.
I said. He's still the king.
Well, ladies, I'm sorry this time went by so quick. Maybe we can do it again some other time and cover some bases.
Yeah,
but thank you so much
for
being here. And I'm looking forward to next Monday night at the Mob Tour.
Yep, right.
And looking forward to having Johnny.
Yep, I'm bringing Johnny May 6th, is it? You
May
want
6th.
Him? Yep, we'll be
and
here.
And just before we sign off here, I just want to mention that next Tuesday, the 29th, I'm doing a special 90-minute show about the turning point, or one of the turning points in the law's battle against Tony Spilotro and his gang. It's called Bertha's. And I'm going to have the participants from that event with me, two former FBI agents, two former Las Vegas Metro cops, and one former mobster. And we'll be talking about Bertha's, the lead-up to Bertha's, the night of the event, and the aftermath. So again, it's a 90-minute special next Tuesday night starting 8:30 Pacific. Thank you very much, and have a good week.
Very good.
Well, you are nice.
It went by.
You're not
buying by. You've got to see before you buy. SpyandBuy.com. The world's first free video classifieds.
I love the job.
SpyandBuy.com. You've got to see before you buy.
It's a dream.
how she feels so sad. Don't got the money to take me back to Trinidad. Fine calypso woman, she cooked me shrimp and rice. Fine calypso woman, she cooked me shrimp and rice. These Yankee hot dogs don't treat me stomach very nice. In Trinidad, $1 buy papaya juice, banana pie, 6 coconuts, 1 female goat, and plenty fish to fill the boat. 1 bushel bread, 1 barrel of wine, and all the town she comes to dine. But here is bad, $1 buy cup of coffee, ham or rye. Me throat she's sick from necktie, me feet she hurt from shoes, me pocket full of empty, I got calypso blues. Girls give me big scare, is black to root, is blondie hair, her eyelash falls, her face is paint, and pads are wet, girl, she ain't. She jitterbug when she should waltz, I even think her name is false, but Calypso girl is good a lot, is what you see, is what she got, sitting by the ocean, me how she feels so sad. Got the money to take me back to Trinidad. Wow, 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 wow,
wow, wow, wow, wow, wow, wow, wow, wow.
Live in the studio. We have absolutely nothing to do with pirates. R.
Hey, somebody's crazy. Papa goes the weasel. Everybody knows the weasel blows. But popcorn, she pops real good. I eat popcorn. Everybody eats popcorn. She tastes real nice. Get yourself some now at our refreshment stand.
Sure, I know they have a gadget called an electric eye that does practically the same thing, but that's no good for a waiter. You see, the electricity might give the waiter a shock, then he'd forget to come back to pick up his tip, and he'd lose his professional standing. How does this door opener upper really work? It's very simple. But watch close. Now, here's what happens. You see, waiter places cat B on pile of dirty dishes A. Now, cat B sees mouse C. Of course, this is a stuffed mouse because he must be used for the next waiter. Now, cat jumps on mouse C, causing lever D to lift lighted candle E, which ignites fuse F and sets off bomb G, opening door H very gently. Well, folks, I suppose there are one or two among you who think that my inventions are a bit ahead of their time. A shade fantastic, perhaps. All right, go on and say it. downright screwy. But let me tell you something. I've got lots of company, genuine inventors, guys who've got their stuff protected by the United States Patent Office. And believe me, some of it needs protection, if you know what I mean. For instance, now here's an invention that was granted patent number 556248 back in the year 1896. But don't ask me why. This little nifty is a labor-saving device if there ever was one. It's an automatic hat tipper for the lazy Lothario. Fitted snugly inside of this deluxe derby, that is, in addition to the wearer's slightly addled head, is a conglomeration of wheels, cogs, gears, ratchets, counterweights, strings, and pulleys, which gallantly doffs the chapeau whenever a young heiress passes by. Well, anyway, this is just one example of the many queer devices that have actually been patented. And here's a copy of the patent to prove it. Oh. There are literally hundreds of such patents on file in the United States Patent Office. The inventors were all perfectly serious. They really believed that their inventions would make things easier for us and our lives pleasanter and safer. But by far the most persistent dream of inventors has been to get something for nothing. That is, to create a machine that will start itself, overcome all friction, and still have enough power left to do useful work. In short, perpetual motion machines. Now here's a typical example of what I mean. A famous old standby. Of course, you all know that when something is dipped underwater, it seems to lose weight. So this particular perpetual motion machine is designed to have some of the weights in water and some of them out of water at all times. It's all very simple. And so are you if you think it'll work. But confidentially, I've got one that will work. And if you'll excuse me for a few minutes, I'll show you.
No, Mr. Goldberg, not even your genius is equal to that task. In fact, the United States Patent Office will no longer grant a patent for the design of a perpetual motion machine because the experts in that office know that you can't get something for nothing. That you can't get power out of an engine without paying for it in fuel. Fortunately for us, however, man has discovered a virtually unlimited source of power. He has paid for that power by years of painstaking research and experimentation. That source of power is gasoline, the chief product of the petroleum industry. Gasoline, in fact, is the greatest single source of power in the world today. And the automobile engine is by far the greatest user of gasoline's power. Here's a device that looks like a cross between a trench mortar and an automobile engine. It's just the thing to illustrate the principles of getting power from gasoline. Liquid gasoline contains...